Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3. Raymond Parks III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Time here at Duty Noble Field. We'll be back after this on the LSU Sports Radio Network.
Good morning, Acadiana. Happy Friday to you. This is the Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.7 The Game. You're home for the LSU Tigers. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. The man on the ones and twos, as always, is the illustrious Cody Schutz. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call, as always, on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, 337-706-0111. We got a jam-packed show for you today. We got Tyler Nunes from Tiger Ag. He's going to join us in the third hour live from Washington, D.C. to help us preview the LSU versus Michigan State Sweet 16 contest. We'll be talking with our boy Barry. Barry Hurstis, also in the third hour, giving us any updates about New Orleans Saints free agency and his thoughts about the NFL owners adopting the rule change with being able to challenge non-calls. We'll also be talking with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser, breaking down what's going on the prep scene. We'll also get to the Pelicans. That's right, pulling out the victory against Sacktown last night. We'll have my rant of the week, RPOs with RP3. And, of course, the Houston Astros winning their opener in dominant fashion. But we're going to start off with the clip you heard their co-host of Tiger Rag Radio on the call, Jeff Palermo. LSU drops the series opener against the Fighting Cowbells at Mississippi State. And we had just turned a corner with Zach Hess being the Friday night guy. Now, to be fair to Zach, it wasn't Friday night. It was Thursday. So that could have thrown off his mojo, the having to pitch a day early. But he was not good last night. LSU was able to rally to cut the lead down to a single run there in the eighth inning. Josh Smith was at the plate. Had a runner on second, but LSU star infielder struck out, which ended the late rally.
Can I just interject early this morning? I want to say I watched this whole game last night, and the score being 6-5, final score, it's how they say in football, and it wasn't that close. It wasn't that close. This baseball game was, I mean, Mississippi State dominated until the late innings. I believe it was like the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th innings or something like that. LSU had multiple runners on base with either no outs or one out. And, I mean, they didn't even scratch across a single run until the 8th inning. Got multiple runs. It just 6-5 is a bit deceiving for how poorly LSU played last night. Couldn't hit the ball. Couldn't not even put the ball in play. Couldn't touch the ball. We're striking out. I mean, everybody, left and right. Antoine Duplantis, I mean, he couldn't hit a ball into the ocean off of a boat. It's bad times.
The runs
right
that
now.
They were able to get there with the late rally is a lot of time like garbage time yardage.
Well, they were
right?
solid
garbage.
Hits, but they weren't from the guys. They were from Chris Reed and, you know, Cade Beloso and guys, you know, they weren't from your Antoine Duplantis, your Zach Watson, your Josh Smith.
A couple of things happened in last night's game. Yes, they fell short. They tried to put a rally together, but you're exactly right, Cody. The big guys that they need to hit and step up in that lineup didn't. And like you said, it was other guys that were able to help them chip away. But we talked about this when we previewed the game. Mississippi State had scored 53 runs, man, in its previous three games. They are the highest, they're the team with the highest batting average in the Southeastern Conference. So we knew it was going to be a monumental task, right? You knew going into Stark Vegas that this is a legit team, a legit College World Series team, the number two ranked team in the country. They knock the tar. They destroy the ball. They destroy pitchers. And they had a combination last night, the Tigers did, where they have been woeful at the plate. Remember, they were just shut out a few days earlier by the Cowboys of McNeese State, an average McNeese State team. You know, LSU was able to take an early lead, and you're thinking when you're watching that game, right, Cody, you're like, oh, they jumped out, they got an early lead. You're thinking, well, if Zach can just pitch, he doesn't have to be the best pitcher. He just has to be good. He was neither. After showing good form, especially at Georgia, Mississippi State hit three home runs off of him. Three.
Two of them were back-to-back.
Yeah. Three. If you're the Friday night starter for any program, I don't care if it's LSU or if it's UL, whoever it may be, in college baseball, they set the tone. You put your best guy out there to give yourself the chance to take the first game. Because if you take the first game of a weekend series, it relieves all the stress and pressure off of you because you're like, you know what? We got one in the bank. We need to win one out of two now. It just makes you relax. You don't play stress. You don't play tight. The batters, they get relaxed. They take more pitches. They're not pressing. The other guys that are pitching in the staff, they go out there a little bit more relaxed. Maybe they're a little bit more confident. Maybe they challenge the batters more so than they normally would. But when your alpha, when your top dog goes out there and gets slapped around like Zach has this year, with the exception of that Georgia game and one other game, you automatically put your team in a bad spot. You put them that they have to come from behind in the opening game, and then if they fall short, now they're in a hole. And now the pressure is we got to take two out of two now. It's that simple. That's like common core math kind of simple, right? You got to win the first game. That's why you throw your ace out there. He's the alpha. He's the guy that's supposed to be drafted in Major League Baseball. And he gave up three home runs. And he had pitched so much better. He'd only allowed one run in the previous 15 innings. But they didn't face the likes of Mississippi State. He had a 2-0 lead heading into the bottom of the third, Cody. Because Cabrera stepped up and gave him the two-run dinger, right? So, anytime you hit a home run, it just invigorates the entire ball club. And he goes out there with his guy giving him a two-run lead in the third inning, and it's...
They were... The guys from Mississippi State, they slug. They have Jake Mangum, who hits.
Yeah.
And then they have about four or five guys who just slug the ball. His last name is slipping my mind now, but the kid that hit two home runs last night, his last name starts with the F, I think, for Mississippi State.
Justin Foscue.
Foscue. I mean, that dude was tomahawk swinging, and the ball was, I mean, the trajectory on, I mean, when the ball left their backs, there was no doubt about it. And then at the end of the game, when Brock Mathis is up there and he's like, and he gets a hold of one, and you're like, oh, and it's a lazy fly ball to left field. But it seemed like when the Mississippi State guys hit it, it flew 400 feet. Except for, I will say this, because this is something that I have to give Paul Menary credit for. That end of the game rally, had he made no moves throughout the game, had he stuck with his original starting lineup, that end of the game rally, that doesn't even happen. Because your two biggest parts of that were CJ, I'm forgetting his last name, but the CJ kid on LSU's team that never plays, and he got an AB last night that I was cursing.
The kid from Ruston.
Yeah, I was cursing up left and down to Kaylee. Why is this kid getting an at-bat? You know, you get a base hit here, and you got a two-run game. We can make something. Why is Menary throwing? And then what do I know? The kid racks a double to the wall in the gap. And
C.J. Willis, freshman out of Ruston.
And then Chris Reed comes up following him, and he gets a base hit and knocks Willis home. Chris Reed didn't start at third base. That change was made in, like, the fourth or so inning. So, I mean, that I got to give credit to Paul Menary.
The problems with LSU, it's almost April. They've gone through fall ball. They've gotten all the instruction. They've gotten all the training and the development from their skipper and those assistant coaches. That's all in the past. When it's this time, it falls on the players. You have to go out there and execute. Paul Menary cannot tell Zach Hess, go out there and pitch for Zach Hess. He can't. The perfect situation. He gave up the leadoff double to Mangum. He gets two outs. And what does Hess do? He's one out away to getting out of the jam, right? What does he do? Oh, he hits Elijah McNamee. He hit a batter. And then Foscue comes to the plate, who's already had seven home runs this season before that moment. You hit the guy to put him on base, to allow the guy who, by the way, loves hitting home runs to come to the plate. That's not Paul Menary's fault. That's not the pitching coaching staff's fault. And it was a 1-2 pitch too, Cody. That was the other thing. It was a 1-2 pitch. But once again, this is the thing with Zach. He hits batters. He walks too many guys. And even though he throws strikes and he's got that nasty stuff that you love to see, he's got the stuff that the big league scouts salivate over and are like, this guy can pitch at the next level. He doesn't have the biggest control over it. By the way, here's the other thing, Cody. Every team on LSU's schedule in the SEC, and you could say non-conference schedule as well, LSU has a humongous target on their back. They are the bar for all these teams. So
I disagree. I disagree. After last season, it was one of the worst seasons LSU's had in a long time. And you've got teams like Mississippi State and Vanderbilt running
9,800 people showed up for last night's game, a record crowd.
But the stadium is brand new.
I understand that. But
That's a correlation. That's not a reason for why that happened.
You're telling me, so you're going to sit here and try to tell me
right now,
that the team that was ranked number one to start the season, the team with the most history of any team in
the
SEC,
yes, but right now,
in the SEC, that these teams don't want to knock mighty LSU down a peg, just like they did last year.
So you're telling me the number two team in the country was gunning for the number, whatever, 17 team in the country? That logically doesn't make sense.
So it doesn't make sense that this is a bitter rival, that LSU broadcasters make
but
sure
that's not
to
what
throw,
you said. That's
throw
not what you
shade
said.
At Mississippi
you
State.
You said Mississippi State was gunning for LSU with a target on their back.
Yes.
Well, is it a rivalry or does LSU have a target on their back?
It can be both. Why can't it be both?
Because if LSU has a target on their back, then you would say that every team is gunning for them. If it's a rivalry, then it's just Mississippi State.
It can be both. They have a rivalry with each other, but they also have a target on their back. They don't have a rivalry with every team in the SEC.
I think saying LSU has a target on their back is a bit much right now. I don't think teams are afraid of LSU.
Okay.
I'm sorry for disagreeing. I'll never disagree with you again.
No, that's not that. That's not the point. What I'm saying is, my point is, they are going to get every team's best effort. It does not matter if LSU is struggling. It does not matter if Zach Hess is wetting himself out
this
there.
This is SEC baseball. Saying that they're going to get a team's best effort is that's icing. That doesn't mean anything. Yes, everybody's out there giving their best effort.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I'm like. Because saying that teams are gunning for LSU is almost giving the LSU team an excuse right now.
No,
saying that
I'm not
other
giving
teams
them
are coming out and they're I'm trying so hard that
I'm not giving them an excuse
LSU
at all.
Is just not playing good.
What I'm saying is, this team, my point is this, before you got all fired up on me, my point is this. This team is not talented enough just to walk into anywhere and just win the game with intimidation. They're not that talented, is my point.
Right.
Teams in LSU.
You know, if we know that, the other teams in the SEC know that.
But I don't think, my point is, I don't think this LSU team knows that. I think there's a part of them that thinks that they're still the baddest guys on the block,
well,
if
no,
you know what I mean.
I think so.
And I think they're coming to this harsh reality that they're not as good as maybe we thought they were or they think they are.
Well, that's obvious.
And that's my point. I think they still have that mentality because they put on the purple and gold and they're like, well, we're LSU.
But I want them to have that mentality. I just don't think other teams look at them that way right now.
Not right now. Not after the way they've been playing. Not after dropping 2 of 3 to Georgia and not losing McNeese and not losing. And here's the thing. Zach's supposed to be their best pitcher?
Well, that's been in question for quite a while.
Do you even try to make a change there? I mean, right, it's April. Can you make a pitching change? Can you take him off the Friday night bump? Right? That's the thing. Who's going to be the guy that's going to take his spot?
And it's not even that. It's not even who takes his spot. I don't know if Zach Hess can handle that. If you move him out of that Friday night spot, what does he look like wherever else you put him for the rest of the season? I don't know.
Once again, that whole thing of I don't know if they're that team. This is where we thought this team was going to be different, Cody. We thought this team was going – and they can still turn it around. We thought this team was going to be different and that they were going to be stronger, but I just don't know if they are. We'll have to find out, though. Yeah, still a long season, right? Still a long season. Still
yeah, but they're not. They've got to do something before they start getting any type of credit from me. Later on, I was writing up a little RPO here that'll have some fun stats in it for you, I think.
I love how you hold them to a higher standard, though. I love it. I love the fire from Cody Schutz in the 6 o'clock hour.
I just don't think they're that team right now. Like, LSU football for a period of time was that team, and then Alabama was like, hit you once you go over there for a little bit. LSU baseball was that team, and now you've got multiple schools, whether it's Vandy, Mississippi State, it was South Carolina for a while,
yeah, it was.
That have come through and just been like, go sit in the corner. And that pisses me off.
I can tell. Great start to this Friday edition of the Rap Game with RP3. When we come back from the break, we'll preview the Raging Cajuns weekend series.
We outran the bumper music. That's funny.
You're listening to the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game.
Commercials are a wrap. And that means Rap Game is back. Right now on 103.7 The Game.
Mr. Doubleina, Mr. Bob Doubleina. Mr. Doubleina, Mr. Bob Doubleina.
Welcome back to this fired up Friday edition of the Rap Game with RP3.
Can we please talk about something else?
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. I found, it took me, I've been working at this station as a host since late October, and it took me until almost April to find the thing that really gets my boy Cody Schutz fired up. I'm going to put that in my back pocket
right now. I was telling you during the break, I'm a diehard LSU fan. Everyone knows that. We're not trying to hide that fact.
Correct.
But I was telling you, I also do not appreciate the other LSU fan that continuously, I hate to say makes excuses, because that's not what they do a lot of times. They always look past the negative. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Instead of looking, I don't want to say, because they always look to the positive. That's good to look to the positive. That's fine. But it's not good to look past the negative. And I hate LSU fan that ignores the negative. And with the baseball team that is obviously struggling right now, they've lost four in a row. I mean, that. And anytime I hear somebody try to say, it's LSU, they're fine. They're just running up against teams that are just giving them hell, and they can't get, no, shut up. You're wrong. And
the standard.
I'm cool. I'm collected now.
The standard is higher for you because it's LSU, right?
And it's LSU baseball on top of that.
It's LSU baseball, okay? And there's a standard that goes along with that. And when the team does not play to that standard, it doesn't matter. Your point to me was the whole thing when we were doing the back and forth, and I was goading you a little bit, and it was fun. But the whole thing is that standard, for you, you're like, well, yeah, we're LSU. We're supposed to get everyone's best effort. That doesn't matter. You should be able to overcome the fact that you're going to get the best effort from Mississippi State.
Yes.
It does not matter. Damn it, you're LSU.
Saying that you're getting somebody's best shot, that I don't care about that.
No excuses.
Yeah, you're still losing. That was my whole point, is best shot or not, I don't care what the reason is. Stop ignoring that, why? No, you lost. When you lose the game, the little tally mark goes in the L column, and that is bad. And I don't care why you got there, the reason you got there, that shouldn't be happening as consistently and as frustratingly as it is. I can take a 6-5 loss that's 3-0, and then 3-2, and then maybe you take the lead 4-3, and then they get the lead 6-3, and then you come 6-5, and you came up just short. That's a hell of a baseball game. Not you go up 2-0, and you don't score another run till the 8th inning. Not that.
There's no excuses in this dojo.
1 minute. I need this break. I wanted to talk about something else.
Well, your Tigers will try to get it together tonight. They'll take the field again and try to take the second game of the three-game series, and then they'll wrap things up on Saturday. We're going to keep the baseball talk going. We're going to circle back. We're going to talk about that Raging Cajuns weekend series that we hinted at earlier. We'll get to that later. But up next, Houston Astros. Hey, they go out there. They set the tone. Dominant season opening win. Opening day victory for the Stros. We'll talk more about that here on the Wrap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Back to Wrap Game, the show that's got
a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have you.
And a host that desperately wants to be called
El Duderino if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
We please ask that you don't call Ray that or any of the following.
The dude. His dudeness.
Or
duder.
Thank you. Now, back to RP3.
Yeah, you almost expected him to do it again.
Yeah.
Huh?
I asked him earlier, are you going to swing at the first pitch? He said, why does everybody always ask you that? I said, because you always trumpet whether or not you're going to do it. This ball's poked to center. It's got a chance. Kiermaier back. He's on the warning track, and center, it's gone! George Springer! Three-run homer puts the Astros up 3-0.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. If you do call, do not bring up LSU baseball to Cody Schutz, because he will likely yell in the phone at you, to you, about your mama. There's no telling.
No, no, nobody brought up mamas. No, 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 no. You're putting words in my mouth now. No, no. I respect mamas.
That clip you did hear, though, was a baseball team taking care of their business. Opening day yesterday, Houston Astros, for whatever reason, Major League Baseball did not want to give H-Town the opportunity to watch an actual opening day game. So they forced the Astros to be on the road. Did not matter. Astros go on the road. They take down the artist formerly known as the Devil Rays, 5-1. Springer, as you heard, the three-run dinger. Give them an early 3-0 lead. And that wasn't the only guy that teed off on the Tampa Bay pitching. Michael Brantley, he had a solo homer. And, of course, the former league MVP, Jose Altuve, had a solo home run as well. It just wasn't the bats, though, for the Astros yesterday. Justin Verlander. You know, they gave him that big-time extension right before the start of the season. I want to say it was like 10 days out. And people are like, well, you know, he's a little bit older. Does he still have the same stuff? So forth and so forth. Well, he's the ace of the staff. He deserves having that extra paycheck. And he proved it yesterday in the opening day game. This is his stat line. 7 innings, 1 earned run, 1 walk, and 9 Ks. Verlander was in midseason to late season postseason form yesterday, came out, dominated the Rays, and great start. Look, it's opening day. Baseball is an extremely long season. We all know that. It takes forever. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. But for the Astros to come out with kind of a quiet offseason, right? You know, they didn't make a ton of moves. They had some pitchers. They had a lot of guys that ate up a lot of innings as part of their rotation go elsewhere. Dallas Keuchel is still a free agent. He may come back to the Astros. He may not. You have other guys that left the team to sign better deals or, you know, for more money. But they still got their young core. And they didn't have to make a lot of splashy moves in the offseason. They got Bregman to re-sign a big deal. He's a $100 million man, the former LSU star. They got their young core locked up with Carrera and Jose Altuve. They're all under contract for at least next 2 to 3, 4 years. So with a quiet offseason, to still be able to come out here and start off the 2019 season in dominant fashion with your lineup drilling pitches over the wall in that abomination of a stadium that the Rays play in. First of all, I'm about to get fired up. I just walked my own self into getting fired up here. Have you seen that craptastic place that they play down there in Tampa? I understand it rains a lot. Why are you playing in something that looks like an indoor shed? It's awful. There's no atmosphere there. Even when they had Longoria there and they had that good run with Joe Maddon as the skipper, there's no energy there at the Trop. It's an awful place to play. Cody, they have spring training in Florida. So the majority of Major League Baseball teams,
yep,
some of them go out to Arizona. The majority of them, though, go to South Florida to get ready for the season. They play outside in South Florida.
Makes
correct?
Sense. Yeah,
correct?
No, that makes sense.
Yes. But the geniuses down there in Tampa Bay were like, you know what would be great? Let's play in a dome stadium that has the personality of wet wallpaper.
Put a roof on it, huh?
How can you call yourself Tropicana Field? Orges need sunlight. and yet them played inside.
I mean, technically, Tropicana is just the juice. Juice doesn't need sunlight.
Fair point. I kind of hate you right now. But fair point. But I digress about my side
but,
rant.
No, I understand what you're saying, though.
But back to the Stros.
Maybe the Rays and the Marlins, they have like their own little side bet going on right now. Of who can disgrace South Florida more?
It's just, I mean, look, trust me. There's places in the panhandle that disgrace Florida on a daily basis. Okay?
Shout out to Brady Amon.
I love Brady. Pete Cole is not one of those places, but there's some other places, what I call the trash byway. Florida. It is its own enigma for sure. But the Stros, they get it done. 5-1 over the Rays. Verlander, terrific. Brantley, Altuve, Springer knocked the socks off the ball. Great way to start off the season. You can listen to the second game of this series tonight. First pitch, 6:10 on the Rewind 97.7 FM or 1330 AM Lafayette. So if you want to check them out, listen to our sister station tonight.
You know what bothers me about opening day baseball is, and this has happened at least two seasons in a row now to my Cubs, which, by the way, I'm making up for yesterday.
Oh, my man. I,
instead of just rocking just the T-shirt like or the ball cap like you were looking for, I decided to break out the whole Anthony Rizzo pinstripe jersey. See?
Oh, you went with the pinstripes too. Nice.
And it looks fresh. Yeah, so
that looks fresh.
And it's very nice. It's very nice material too. So I wanted to make up for yesterday because I did feel like a terrible fan. It was opening day and I didn't have a single piece of Cubs gear on. So today I had to make up for it. I broke out the back of the closet. So I got the nice pinstripe jersey on. But for the second season in a row, at least, possibly more, the Cubs played on opening day, as everyone does. There are, 16 games on opening day, always and forever.
Correct.
The Cubs are off today. And they'll re-pick up the series tomorrow.
So what?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I say. And it happened again last year. They played on opening day with all the other teams, and then the next day they had the day off.
That's got to be some type of television scheduling thing, right?
I guess
right?
So. Because, yeah, the Cubs, they played yesterday, and they won 12-4 in the opener against the Rangers. And they're in Arlington. They are off today, and they play tomorrow at 7:05.
And that's the other thing. And
I hate that. It's happened 2 years in a row now. I want to watch more baseball.
And I hate to be this guy, too. Because everyone deserves to get a little love. But shouldn't your premier teams start off open the season at home for opening day?
Shouldn't
the Yankees, Red Sox, Cubs, Astros are really good right now? Have
Dodgers.
Dodgers. Why not have them start off at home? They're their best teams. They're the teams that are coming off playoff appearances. They're the teams that are going to be World Series contenders. Wouldn't you want them to be at home and have the energy of them being at home? Like, I don't know. From a business model, it seems a little flawed. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just me.
And like you said, it has to be a television thing somehow, but that just still doesn't make sense to me because everything's on TV now somewhere. So I just don't understand why, and this is the second season in a row because I remember I got frustrated about this last year. It's like, you know, you just get going. It's like when you're in the tutorial part of a video game, and Pokemon's especially like this. They hold your hand through the first, hour of the game, and then right when you think, oh, yeah, I get to move on, no, here's one more little tutorial part before you could actually go play the game. That's how I feel right now. We had off-season, spring training, we were tutorialing all the things, and then, oh, yes, where we get to play the game. No, not so fast. Wait a little bit longer. And my feelings are hurt.
I always appreciate how you can somehow find a way to get Pikachu and the rest of the gang somehow in the show. You do it very covertly. But you're talking about the Cubs, and all of a sudden it's Pokemon.
If it's not Pokemon, it's wrestling. So one of the two. Everything, it's all connected. Raymond, remember, it's all connected.
It's all connected. It's all connected.
He looks at his phone. It's all connected.
Oh, it is all connected. Astros, though, start off the year on the right foot. 5-1 victory over the artist formerly known as the Devil Rays. Let's see if they can keep it going. My biggest concern for the Stros, the rest of the rotation. They lost a lot of experienced guys on there, and they're counting on some younger cats, some guys that haven't had to deal with that kind of workload. They got Verlander. He's your ace. He's your anchor. But are the guys who are going to step up be your 2, 3, 4 guys? Can they handle that? Can they handle the pressure of playing for a team that has World Series aspirations? We'll have to find out. When we come back, a former LSU Tiger did something terrific yesterday and did so against my team. And this is why I'm not wearing my Braves gear today, out of disgust. Right here on the Wrap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
His favorite breakfast food is crepes.
Oh, I love the crepes he's at. I wish I could crawl into one of those right now.
He does karate in his garage.
You want to go do karate in the garage?
Yup.
And he's always got Little River Band on deck.
LRB. I've always got Little River Band loaded up here. I got 6 discs in here.
Here's RP3. Fastball in the...
That was the sound of Mr. Aaron Nola throwing strikes. The silence you heard was the Atlanta Braves lineup, the baby Braves, who have great expectations of getting back to the postseason this year. My Atlanta Bravos, the team of my childhood and my adulthood. Well, Nola wasn't having any part of it. He went out there, the former LSU star who got himself a good contract extension this summer. Remember, he finished in the top 5 in the Cy Young, I want to say even top 3 in the National League Cy Young voting this past season. Had a breakout year, all-star season for the Phillies. He goes out there, 6 innings of work, gave up only 1 earned run. Did walk 5 batters, but he struck out 8 Bravos in the 10-4 win over the Braves. So, the former LSU star earning his paycheck, so to speak. But this is what we've seen from him. He has slowly but surely developed into an ace of a staff. And there were some questions whether or not he could develop into that guy. We saw how good he was at LSU. He had those, you know, he showed the flashes. But you never do know if a guy is going to transfer that over into the big leagues. I mean, there's been a lot of stars at the collegiate level. There's been a lot of stars that come through that have come through LSU that have not developed into top-notch pitchers or players. But Nola is only 25 years old, guys. The BR native has an okay record overall since he's been in the big leagues, 42-38, earned run average around 3, strikes out a lot of guys, 605. But he made his first All-Star team last year. He's a first-round draft pick by the Phillies, 7th overall in the 2014 draft. It's been that long since Nola played at LSU. Damn, that flew by.
Yeah, I mean,
it seemed like yesterday he was pitching for them.
We missed the years of Nola and Lang on the team together.
Together.
Yikes.
Ridiculous. He made his MLB debut in 2015. Like I said, he earned his first All-Star selection last year. And last year he finished 3rd in the voting in the NL Cy Young. And he's just getting better and better. You know, 2015, he had 12 starts, went 7-3 overall. He had a down year in 2016. Remember, that's when the question marks were going to be, is he really going to be a guy that the Phillies are going to be able to count on? He had an up and down year. He had to go on the disabled list. He had that strain in his right elbow. And look, he was mediocre. He had an ERA of nearly 5, and he was 6-9 overall. But then 2017, he kind of bounced back, right? 10-8 overall. The Phillies haven't been good since Nola's been there, so to be fair. But he turned around, and then last year he was just lights out. His first 18 starts of the year, he's 11-2 with an ERA of 2.41. Went 17-6 overall, 33 starts. So it appears that last year, you know, he built up to last year's performance. He had showed the flashes as a rookie. Then after that, he had the hurt year where he got banged up. He had the elbow issues, and he pitched poorly. Then he had the bounce back year after that. Then last year was the breakout year, all-star, third in the Cy Young voting. It appears that the Phillies have their ace, have their franchise pitcher. That's why they gave him that four-year, $45 million extension back in February. That also includes a fifth-year option that's worth about $16 million. So Aaron Nola starting things off right, the former LSU star. Shutting down my Bravos 10-4 on opening day.
I mean, good for him. I think this is still to talk about Nola. Scroll back up the Twitter feed a little bit. I saw this video from the CBS affiliate in Philly. They were talking to fans before the game, and this right here, I think this is probably why you play the game. He's talking about Aaron Nola. That's an 8-year-old kid saying, I want to grow up to be a pitcher just like him and throw a lot of strikeouts. I got chills just here. Like, that's why you play the game.
And I want to say something else about the Phillies. I know they broke the bank, right? They backed up the Brinks truck for Bryce Harper to sign him away, gave him the $330 million deal. By the way, Bryce Harper went hitless in his debut.
He did. So did Machado.
So did Machado.
Can I give a big shout out to our boy, friend of the station, Nick Suss. He's moved all over the place. He's had like 4 different jobs in like five years. So it's crazy. But he tweets out Phillies broadcast with a quote. Sometimes when Aaron Nola is back home in Baton Rouge, he talks about missing all the great restaurants in Philly. End quote. Nick Suss hits about 3 spaces and just puts, okay. Like, it's the great, you got to see this.
No one says that.
No one says that.
The kid that grew up in Baton Rouge and went to LSU is not talking about how he's missing food from Philadelphia. Okay.
Nick Suss all over the Philly broadcasters there. Well done, sir.
Yeah. Bravo to Nick. Friend of the show. But I will say this. Yeah, they spent the money on Harper. It's a big splash. They need help with the lineup. They need the run production. I get all that. Aaron Nola may be more important to the Phillies' success than Bryce Harper. You need to have that ace. You need to have that guy that's going to anchor your rotation. It's not Jake Arrieta for them. It's Nola. He had the breakout year last year, and the Phillies are banking on him being their guy that's going to win them 17, 18, 19, possibly 20 games a year. You need that guy if you're going to be a postseason team. You need that guy if you're going to try to win a World Series. You can find bats. It's tougher to have top-notch pitching to find it and to keep it than it is to find guys who can hit 38 home runs. That's why I think as much of all the press that's been given to the Phillies for signing Bryce Harper and how big of a deal that is by poaching him away from another team out of the NL East, the former LSU star, Aaron Nola, may be more important to their success this year and moving forward than the boy with the locks and the bat flips.
From Las Vegas.
From Las Vegas.
At least he went to high school in Vegas. I don't know if that's where he's from, I guess. But
I don't know where.
Chris Bryant, Bryce Harper, same high school.
That's right. They're apparently besties.
Yeah.
Once again, this whole notion. You remember when that was the talk? Bryce Harper's going to the Cubs. I was like, no, he's not.
I didn't want him.
He doesn't fit into what they do there.
I was going to say, stay away from my nucleus.
Yeah.
Leave my team alone.
You think Rizzo and those guys are going to put up with his shenanigans, right? His pouting? Come on.
They barely put up with Javi Baez. Like, barely.
Bryce Harper nearly got beat up by a relief pitcher. I don't want to hear about him.
Know your role.
Know your
Shut
role.
Shut your mouth.
Papelbon tried to beat him up twice. That's going to be the first hour for the Rap Game with RP3. Baseball heavy, I know. Second hour coming up, we'll lead it off with my rant of the week, and then we'll have RPOs, and then we'll talk with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser, get some prep talk on the air. You're listening to the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for like locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
Opening day. It's a holiday. It's a beautiful thing. When you're a child and you're growing up and your favorite team is playing, you can't wait for opening day. Hope springs eternal. It's a beautiful thing. People take off of work. My buddy, one of my best friends, David Dinsmore, he took off work yesterday. My man shot me a photo on his phone. He had the TV, he had the laptop, he had the tablet, and he had his phone. All four going watching games. It's a beautiful thing. But for some reason, Major League Baseball wants to try to screw it up. First of all, what the hell did we have to start the season in Japan for? For a game that no one watched? I asked people, I go, do you know that technically opening day occurred a week ago in Tokyo? And they're like, you're kidding, right? Who played? They didn't even know who played. Why are you playing over in Japan? Yes, Ichiro was there, and he got to have one more tip of the cap to the crowd there where he's from. It was a beautiful moment. I get it. But who the hell watched that game? No one was taken off of work. It was on like at 3:30 in the morning. No one's waking up to watch the Mariners and the Athletics play in Japan at 3:45 in the morning. Are you huffing paint thinner, Major League Baseball? What are you doing?
What do you think, this is the World Cup? What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with them? But that starts it off. But then here's the other thing. And I hinted at this rant because Cody Schuetz got fired up to start off the show, and it just carried over. It seeped over here like a nefarious fog. Why in the hell do you have opening day and you're having these teams that have terrible attendance, that are awfully run franchises in terrible sports markets, much less baseball markets, hosting the opening day series? Are you crazy? It's very simple. Every year, the people that make the schedule for Major League Baseball should do this. It's very simple. It took me 3 minutes. And I'm not the smartest person in the world. I'm usually not even the smartest person in a room. I know where to get food, so I guess that makes me valuable, but not necessarily smart. Opening day. Every opening day, the New York Yankees should be at home. The Boston Red Sox should be at home. The Chicago Cubs should be at home. St. Louis Cardinals, San Francisco Giants, Los Angeles Dodgers, Houston Astros, Atlanta Braves, Philadelphia Phillies, Cleveland Indians, and I'm going to give love to the Kansas City Royals because that's a great damn baseball city, and they come out for their team even when they're terrible. That's who should be hosting opening day games and opening day weekend series. It's very simple. You want it to be an event. You want people to make sure it's a marquee thing so you have opening day occur in those cities, in those markets that are baseball crazy, that love their teams, that ride and die for their teams, that go to the ballpark and spend the money and buy the popcorn and the hot dogs and drop $150 for a night at the ballpark. That's what you want to do. But instead, we get forcing the Houston Astros to play at the damn Devil Rays in empty Tropicana. Or make the Chicago Cubs, a national branded team, by the way, to play at the Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers are in a full rebuild mode, and they're not even going to be playing in that park much longer. You have them go play in Texas? Yeah, let's have the Cubs. Let's have one of our big national brands, historic franchises. Let's go have them be on the road. That makes a lot of sense. The Padres hosted an opening day game. But the worst, even worse than the damn Devil Rays hosting an opening day game, or the Rangers, the Marlins. The Marlins hosted a game. They allowed the Marlins to host on opening day. Why? I just have questions. Why? Yes, I understand that it's kind of neat to have that Rockies-Marlins matchup because they both came into the league. They were the two expansion teams at that time. I remember that fondly. Then have it in Colorado because those folks actually care about their baseball team and they show up for Rockies games. So even if you're forced to, hey, Ray, those 10 or those dozen teams that you say are marquee franchises, well, we run out of them. We don't have enough. There's only 30 teams, right? Well, you know what? You give the love to the Rockies. You give love to the team that actually has fans that show up for games. This is why Major League Baseball can't get out of its own damn way. They make dumb decisions. And I don't want to hear this argument. Well, Raymond, it's only fair. It's only fair that every team, you know, it's part of a rotation, that they get to have this. You know, it's only, you know, these other franchises, you know, they deserve. No. First of all, life ain't fair. So stop your whining. You're not a beautiful and unique snowflake. Sometimes you're garbage. And if you're garbage, you don't get to go eat at the fancy five-star restaurant if you're hot garbage, okay?
I think what you're trying to say is there are no participation trophies.
Yes.
I think that's what you're trying to say.
I got so angry.
Calling people garbage.
You know what I'm saying?
This is the best rant yet, by the way. Continue.
Not everyone deserves to go eat a delicious steak at Mr. Lester's. Okay? They just don't. So I don't want to hear this mess that it has to be fair and that everyone deserves. No. Your marquee franchises have to do this. Look at what the NFL does. The NFL makes the decision for the 100th anniversary of professional football that they're going to have. Who are they going to have open up the season? The Chicago Bears and Green Bay Packers. Two of the most storied franchises in professional football history. Duh, that was an easy decision. Oh, you mean we're going to feature one of the teams that actually has fans as board members. They don't have an owner. They have a group of people. And the Bears are some of the most devout and admittedly drunk fans in all of professional football. Bears, Packers. The NFL, that's another reason why the NFL has done such a good job of marketing themselves and making it event watching television. The NBA is taking the same approach. NBA always pushes themselves around Christmas Day. It's all marquee matchups. It's not the Sacramento Kings versus the New Orleans Pelicans on Christmas Day. Okay? It's Lakers, Celtics. It's the marquee franchises, the best teams. The Golden State Warriors always play on Christmas. The Houston Rockets play on Christmas Day because that's a big day. That's essentially, it's technically not the opening day of the season from the NBA, but that's when people start really paying attention to the NBA is for that Christmas Day lineup. The NBA knows how to market. NFL knows how to market. But you got Major League Baseball over there going, you know what's great? Let's have the Tampa Bay Devil Rays and the Florida Marlins host opening day contest. The 12-year-old inside of me that collected baseball cards and had his own baseball card shop and who loves baseball. This is why Major League Baseball infuriates me. It's because of dumb decision-making like this. It's not hard. It's not hard. Why are you taking away from your own product? I would be on board if these teams actually sold tickets. But they don't. The people in those communities don't care. They don't care. The only time they've cared about baseball down there is when the Marlins try to buy. Well, they did buy two World Series. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, Cody. And I got to calm myself down. I got to calm myself down, man. I got to call my daughter here. She's getting ready for school. I got to call her during the commercial break. I can't be all angry,
that
Dad.
That is this break. We maybe need to move the rant.
If my daughter's listening, Daddy will not be angry with you, sweetheart. Coming up here on the Rap Game with RP3. RPOs with RP3. Right here on 103.7 The Game.
Ricky Bobby.
Send it back.
Happy Gilmore.
You're gonna die, clown!
Gordon Bombay.
The real Minnesota Miracle Man.
And Peter LaFleur.
You want to become a cheerleader to prove to a girl that you are not a loser? High school's changed a little bit since I was a kid.
These are sports heroes that we can all look up to. Back to the show with the host who's got a tattoo of each one. Rap Game with RP3. Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre.
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho.
My favorite segment of the week. It's RPOs with RP3 coming at you right now on the Rap Game with RP3. Live on 103.7 The Game. We are in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We got a little time to actually let this edition of RPOs breathe a little bit, Raymond. And that's what I need to do right now. I need to breathe a little bit because we're going to start with LSU baseball.
Uh-oh.
Take a deep breath as I want to give you a little stats, if you will. LSU baseball right now, 17-9 overall record. Struggling would be an understatement to say what the Tigers are doing right now. Check this out. They are 16-2 at home. Amazing. Great. Love it. On the road, 1-7. RPO for me, Ray, that this whole struggle for LSU could maybe just be boiled down to a home-road type of thing. Is it really that simple?
I'm going to pass.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
And I'm going to pass because if you're LSU and you're supposed to be built to make a run to the College World Series and to hoist another championship trophy there in Omaha, you're going to have to know how to win games on the road. Like, you're going to have to win games on the road in conference play. You're going to have to win games on the road at the conference tournament so you can get host that NCAA regional and host a super regional. I pass. A lot of the teams that they've defeated at home are far inferior competition. Texas Southern, Bryant, okay, ULM, Army, Air Force.
Couldn't even beat Northwestern State.
They couldn't beat Northwestern State. They couldn't beat Munich State. So if
Northwestern State was on the road.
Yeah, that was on the road. We stand corrected.
My bad.
But that said, you know, they haven't necessarily – who have they defeated at home at Alex Box that's a world beater?
I don't know.
There isn't one. Cal, maybe?
That sweep from Texas at the beginning of the season looking more and more prevalent, looking more – or looking less like it was just maybe early season issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
So, I don't know. We'll be interesting to see because – they had Kentucky at home. We've talked about how bad Kentucky is in the SEC.
Woof.
Okay. So they haven't really played anyone that's top-notch at home at Alex Box. Their two best teams that they've played, Georgia on the road, and now Mississippi State on the road. Let's see what's going to happen when they host some of those better teams right. in the SEC at Alex Box. And if they struggle against them, then it's not. So I'm going to correct myself. I'm going to take an option. I got to see what they do against a top-notch team in the SEC at home at Alex Box Stadium.
You're taking the option with the tendency to pass.
Yeah.
You know, I
yeah.
feel you. I feel yeah. you on that one. All right, now we're going to move on to something that still kind of makes me a little angry, but not as angry as LSU baseball. Talk a little March Madness with you, Ray. Guess who I had in the championship game, if you don't remember, in my bracket? You probably don't remember. I had Duke.
Yes, you did.
And the Volunteers. Tennessee.
The dreamsicles.
So let's say, for all intents and purposes, my bracket is blown to all hell and back.
It is.
But nonetheless, Purdue, 3-seed, they're not, you know, a Cinderella story. By no means, they are not. But
hey, and to be fair, I had Tennessee in the Final Four, too.
Yeah, I had them in my finals.
So,
it hurts.
So I did all that bragging on Monday. I got 15 of the 16 Sweet 16 teams. We even talked to Connor O'Gara on yesterday's show. And he's like, yeah, he says, you know, I says, but we'll see how I fare on Monday. Now, another one of my Final Four teams easily won yesterday. That was Texas Tech.
Yep,
they mowed down Michigan.
And I had Michigan in my Final Four as well.
So, yeah, your bracket's really done.
I lost two of four Final Four teams yesterday. So, it's safe to say now that screw my bracket. Come on, Tigers!
There it is.
That's what's safe to say. But I want to ask you about that Purdue-Tennessee game last night. It ended in overtime. The Boilermakers getting the win 99-94. Busted my bracket like crazy. RPO for me. After that big win, screwing my bracket over, Purdue makes it to the Final Four.
I think they match up really well against, they're going to play, what, Virginia?
Yes.
Yeah. I watched the abomination that was that game against Oregon last night, and I know everyone's like, well, Virginia, that's just their style of basketball. It's bad basketball. I don't care. It's bad. It's bad to watch. It's bad on the eyeballs. Okay.
It doesn't pass the eye test.
Oh, it's just awful basketball to watch. It's a college basketball game in the low 50s? Come on, dude. Stop.
It was like with 11 minutes left, I think it was 6-6. And I'm not joking. You're like, I think with like 11 and change left, it was like 6-6.
It was not good. So, Virginia has redeemed itself after last season's first round loss, and they made it to the Elite Eight for only the second time under Tony Bennett. So, and they are a one seed, and they do play really sensational defense. That they do. They shut down people. But Purdue has some playmakers, and it feels like they've now broken through. You know, this is a team, they get to the Elite Eight for the first time since, I think, 2000. And Painter, their head coach, that would have been the knock on him, right? That they get to the Sweet 16, but then they get up, they don't get any further. They push through. They take out the two seed in the Tennessee Volunteers. You know, they're probably feeling themselves a little bit. I like that matchup for Purdue. So if I had to now bet, I'd say I would predict Purdue's going to upset Virginia and march on to the Final Four in Minneapolis.
There you go. I like how you did that one. You didn't give me the run, pass, or option till the end. So I was listening to what you were saying. I was like, I don't know. Is he going to swerve me at the end? I don't know where you were going. But, I mean, at this point, I'm going to root for Purdue on that side of the bracket as well because they blew it up. And at this point, if they're going to get to the finals, they'd have to take down North Kakalaki. So I'd be excited to see that, too. Why the hell not?
And they have a great nickname.
The Boilermakers. Or the Fighting Drew Breeses, whichever you prefer.
The Fighting Drew Breeses. I like that.
We got another RPO coming at you, Raymond. We're going to go back to LSU, but now we're going to hit the gridiron. Talk a little football. LSU defensive back Christian Fulton. You know him. You love him. He suffered that season-ending ankle injury with three games left to go last year. The prognosis for Fulton was not great. He was not expected to be ready for spring practice or anything like that, and they were just going to playing a wait-and-see type thing to see when he could get back on the field. Well, guess what, Raymond? At spring practice yesterday, Christian Fulton was on the field with the team. Now, while the rest of the defensive backs, they were in full pads, Christian Fulton in shorts and a t-shirt. I still think, personally, it's very promising that Christian Fulton is out there, especially having a prognosis of not making spring practice at all. Well, I want to ask you, RPO, forget about the spring game. We don't really care about that. Don't go out there and re-hurt yourself or re-aggravate Correct. Anything. But RPO on Christian Fulton being in full pads and a full go 100% at the start of fall practice.
I will run with that, and I say he's going to be the number one corner. And Derek Stingley Jr. will be the number two. And the reason why I think
you... Well, now I want to ask you another RPO. Does that last all season?
Probably not.
Nah, that's actually,
but
back to the original.
But if you're Dave Aranda and the rest of that LSU coaching staff, you want it's a promising sign for Fulton being out there. I wouldn't put him in pads. I just let him run in shorts
right.
for spring.
The article you gave me about it mentioned at the end about you know it being unlikely that he plays in the spring game
Correct.
Scrimmage, but they're still mentioning it. The fact that it's even getting mentioned, that worries me a little bit.
And as the legend of Stingley grows day by day, you know, he could probably be the starter, your number one. And look, the coaching staff may say, hey, Fulton's still coming back off injury. He did so well last year as the number two guy opposite of Greedy Williams, but he's also the veteran. You could let Stingley line up on the other side of the field and not have to rush him out there, even though he's immensely confident and people are comparing him to Patrick Peterson already.
It's like when Jared Poche was still starting on Friday nights for LSU when Alex Lang was on the staff.
So Stingley's better than Fulton, and Stingley's going to be better than Christian Fulton, but it would be beneficial to have Christian Fulton start the season as the number one. So, yes, I think that's a promising sign, and yes, he will start the season opener against, I want to say, Georgia Southern. He'll be one of the starting cornerbacks there, Cody Schutz. And that's going to do
it. That's all I got.
That's going to do it.
That's all I got.
For this edition of the RPOs with RP3. When we come back after this break, we're going to welcome on Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He covers high schools for them. And also, hey, just a quick reminder before we go to break. Do you like golf, my friends? Do you enjoy it? Well, you can take the 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge for your chance to win a $100 gift card from golfballs.com. It's real easy, guys. Just go to the 103.7 The Game webpage, click on the link, and sign up. Pick the golfer you think will win the 2019 Masters. That's it. You just got to pick one guy. It's not the ACT. You're just picking a golfer, okay? Even if you really don't know golf all that much, just go. Okay, what
you
got to lose?
If you don't know golf all that much, click Tiger Woods.
Yeah, all right, Rory McIlroy. If the winning golfer, by the way, is selected by more than one entry, we will put all the correct entries in a raffle and select a winner. You can win a $100 gift card. It's that easy, guys. Just go to the website, click on the link, sign up, pick a golfer. Real simple.
You can find the link on our Facebook page and Twitter as well.
That's right. Take the 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge from 103.7 The Game. We got to go to break. Eric Narcisse coming up here on 103.7 The Game.
Everybody loves Raymond, and everybody loves the end of a commercial break. This must be a good moment for you. Let's get back to Rap Game with RP3.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of this Fired Up Friday edition of the show. He covers high school sports for the Daily Advertiser. It's the one and only Eric Narcisse. Eric, how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, I'm doing well, Raymond, man. How are you?
It's been a long time, man. I'm glad to see you back here in Acadiana, where you made a name for yourself, man, and did a lot of terrific work. So, first of all, welcome back home, man. How's it feel to be back home after spending the last few years over in Texas and on the East Coast?
Well, I mean, I tell you what, it's been good. You know, it's crazy how, you know, I came back, and I never really thought I would come back, actually. I never thought I'd plan to kind of stay going, and it's funny just how things work out, man, and, you know, it all just kind of fell into place, and it's been, the reception's been great, but, you know, it didn't take long before it's like, hey, we, you know, all right, welcome back, but can we start getting this and that and this, so it's been good, though, man. I'm definitely excited to be back home.
Well, man, congrats being back at the Daily Advertiser, man. I know you'll kill it. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show, man. Look, I want to start off with kind of the big news that's been going on lately. And I just kind of want to get kind of, I guess, your insight or your opinion on it, especially after being away for, you know, more than a few years and kind of coming back to the state. You know, the LHSAA decided to makes this decision with Lafayette Christian with their use of non-faculty coaches. And, you know, they decided that they've, I guess, are going to suspend them, reprimand them. They fined LCA. They gave them a hefty fine, the suspension of four coaches, athletic director Barry Baldwin, football coach Trev Falk, boys basketball coach Errol Rogers, and girls basketball coach Devin Lanier for a whole calendar year. This isn't the first time that the state has butted heads with LCA. Galen Alexander comes to mind, the former Brobridge High star who transferred in. They said that he couldn't play. Then a third party overruled the state, and he was able to play, and then he went up to LSU, and now he's at Georgetown. As someone who's now back in the state after being a while for being gone for a while, what are your just thoughts about this decision to do this and the state's stance against the non-faculty coaches?
Well, I'm gonna tell you right now, man. It's something that I've never really quite understood. And I say that from a standpoint of, you know, you allow it in other sports. You know, girls basketball, boys basketball, and football are the only sports the LHSA does not allow non-faculty coaches to serve as a head coach. And it's, you know, it's silly because, you know, you can, if you go and you look around the state, I mean, you know, there are many people who do this. You know, most notably, before I even, you know, mention a name or anything like that, I'm going to put my name out there. A lot of people, you know, maybe remember, maybe don't, but there was a, and I'm trying to remember exactly the year, but I believe it was 2008. It was the 2008-2009 basketball season. I was a girls basketball coach at Cecilia High School.
I remember that.
And, you know, they were about to drop the program because they could not find a coach. No one would coach them. And so we had a faculty person who showed up for games, but they weren't the coach. You know, and if you then they implemented rules. Oh, okay, well. And I knew it had a lot to do with more so like the referees, they started enforcing more, not all of them. There were some, there was like, look, I'm not worried about it, but there were some who still had some issues with the fact of something I wrote long time ago when I was 17, which was really stupid. It was something, I was young and I said something stupid, but, you know, I couldn't stand up. Only the non-faculty coach couldn't stand up. But there were some coaches, I mean, some referees who were like, look, dude, we know you're the coach, just, you know, whatever. And I never really ever said anything to referees. I never got a technical. I never did anything. But I served as that coach to save a program. And we actually ended up making the playoffs for the first time in school history. We went on to lose the Capitol. But so, I mean, that's how much of a joke it is. But also, a lot of people remember New Iberia Senior High. If you went to a New Iberia Senior High girls game, everyone saw Jeremy Bonin. Like, no one, everyone knew Jeremy Bonin was the head coach. But then they started trying to, you know, the LHSA started trying to enforce their rule of, hey, look, non-faculty coaches, they can't be standing and stuff like that. And I remember that for Jeremy. And I remember when they got to the state tournament. So it's not unusual.
And not to mention, Eric, all the other sports. You mentioned it before, right? Golf, tennis, soccer. Most of those coaches are not on staff. They're not faculty coaches. They're volunteers. They have a regular 9-to-5 job, and they come out there and they coach those teams. It's okay for those to still serve as coach with no big deal. Why is it such a big deal for them for football and basketball?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and you went, you know, to baseball. Most of them are faculty coaches, but they don't have to be.
Correct.
Softball, they don't have to be. Wrestling, most of your wrestling coaches aren't faculty, but, you know, if they are, they don't have to be. So, I mean, I understand it for basketball. I mean, you know, because I understand, like, they don't want AAU coaches is basically what it comes down to. They're trying to keep AAU coaches out. But there's even a rule, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, but there's a guideline as to what a head coach – so, like, for example, if a head coach of a basketball team also coaches AAU, and I think it's if he coaches – he can't coach more than 4 of his own kids on an AAU team. If he does, then he can't be a coach, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's how the rule goes. But then what defines what the role is of a head coach in football? It doesn't say in the rule book that a head coach has to do this. Oh, he has to call this many plays, or he has to at least be the offensive coordinator, or he has to be one actually instructing the kids. There is no guidelines of what determines the role of a head coach. And I think that's probably the most frustrating thing for people in this situation is that, hey, look, what is a head coach? Our head coaches, they're there. They're running practice. They're talking to the kids. They're engaged. But are we getting in trouble because our non-faculty coaches are too involved? Is that what we're saying? I think that's kind of the interesting thing is that it's what exactly did they do wrong? Are you saying that Barry Baldwin was never at practice? Are you saying Barry Baldwin, there were games he wasn't even at? He wasn't even present? You know, is he not the one handling football at all? Like, he doesn't have anything to do with the football? Like, what exactly did they do wrong? And from what I get from it, it sounds like their non-faculty coaches did too much coaching. That's what it sounds like. And at the end of the day, do we care about the kids and their well-being, or do we care about the fact that we have a team that's winning? That has alienated people because they're arrogant, because they're cocky, because they win a lot. At some point, we can't say we care about the kids, but yet we're trying to hurt the kids. And I think the LHSA is just at some point has to make a decision on what's most important. You know, now look, if they're recruiting and you can catch them recruiting and that's what it is, boom, fine. But to do this, I think that's more of a, hey, we couldn't catch you on this, and we don't really like you, and we know you're doing this, so we're going to catch you on this.
We're talking with Eric Narcisse. He covers high school sports for the Daily Advertiser. You can give him a follow on Twitter at Eric_Narcisse. Eric, let's talk. It's baseball season, man. The usual suspects in Acadiana always are around this time dominating. STM appears to be in kind of championship form. I know they just swept the season series from Turlings Catholic. What do you think about the Cougars so far this season? Do you think they have what it takes, Coach Perkins' bunch? Do you think they have what it takes to make a run?
Well, from everything, I've actually spoken to a couple of the coaches who kind of have raved about STM and what, you know, in the roster that they have this year. That they do seem equipped to make a run. I actually haven't been able to get out there to cover an STM softball, STM baseball game yet. You know, we had such a long run in basketball, and you know, I'm still playing catch up of sorts after having hit the ground running. But from everything I've heard, they're pretty stacked. They're pretty loaded. So I'm definitely eager to get to see them play. I tend to give one of our other employees, Spencer, you know, he likes covering baseball, so I give him a chance to, you know, to go ahead and do that because, you know, I don't mind softball, but I don't mind either, really. But, I mean, I like softball. So, but I haven't seen STM, but from everything I've heard, that they definitely have everything in place to make another run. And what they did this past this week against Terling, sweeping them, you know, who are the three-time, you know, defending state champs, you know, that it doesn't get more impressive than that. I mean, to handle it the way they did.
Eric, who have you seen that has impressed you in person, baseball-wise, so far since you've been back?
I'll tell you what. I know Acadiana's kind of had a tough go at it this week. They're kind of getting, they're kind of going through their gauntlet of the schedule right now. They have to play Sam Houston on Tuesday, and they played Lafayette High yesterday. They lost both of those games, which a lot of people say, well, that, you know, that was the first test that they really had in district play. You know, but I was impressed. I was impressed with their ability, you know, to get up and battle. You know, the game I saw them against Sam Houston, you know, it kind of got away from them, large in part because they just couldn't close out any. They would get two outs, and then a rally would start. And, you know, they had a couple of times, and Sam Houston can swing it. Sam Houston and Barb are going to be, you know, are going to be, you know, as a lot of people expected, you know, the teams to beat in that district. But the other team is Lafayette High. You know, Lafayette High under Sam Tully Jr. has been, you know, they've done a lot of the good things. And they, like I said, they beat Acadiana last night, but they also beat Sam Houston 5-3 last week. So now they are kind of in that, you know, they had a loss to Barb, which is still undefeated. But
a lot of teams lose to Barb over the years, Eric, right?
Yeah.
That's not. They're a powerhouse, but I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah, so, I mean, Lafayette High is going to be a team, you know, that they still have a chance. And it's not saying that Acadiana doesn't, but now with two losses in the district and they still haven't played Barb, they play Barb, I think, next Thursday. So, like I said, they're kind of – and then they also play Como on Tuesday. So, Acadiana, this was a big week. This week and next week were big weeks for them. So, they're going to have to get an upset somewhere to kind of stay in that race and contention. But Lafayette High is a team that's done a lot of good things. And then Brobridge. Brobridge is – I think, if I remember correctly, they're 17-1. And, you know, the one thing that's kind of held them back – of sorts, even though they're 17-1, our thing that's a concern is their offense is being consistent offensively. Like their lone loss is to Cecilia, which I want to say it was like a 3-1 game, but they're loaded with pitching.
Eric, appreciate you coming on, man, making some time for us. Tell the people out there what's going to be coming to your byline here. They can go check out at the Daily Advertiser or pick up an edition of the Daily Advertiser this weekend.
Well, I'd have you know, we'll definitely have some softball, high school softball, which is really starting to pick up as the end of the season is kind of winding down. We have you know, couple features next week that are going to be, I think, really interesting. You know, that we're still, I don't know if they're going to actually what days yet, but you know, there's just some things with, you know, the state of programs. You know, it's just, you know, we look at Northside, you know, looking at their baseball softball programs. Also, I'm trying to look at some things in regards to public schools, public middle schools, with their baseball and softball programs, you know, not at the schools, but what are they doing to kind of help? Is there anything involved to help kids get prepared to play baseball and fast pitch on the next level when they get to high school? So just, you know, just trying to identify some ways to kind of help the area. And I think, you know, starting with the feeder programs, I think that, you know, if we don't start establishing those, we're going to continue to see programs, most importantly in black communities, struggle to succeed baseball wise.
Eric, man, appreciate you making the time for us, man. Enjoying reading your stuff online there at the Daily Advertiser and in the print edition. Keep up the great work, man, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Definitely, man. Thanks for having me. I look forward to being back.
Eric Narcisse, Daily Advertiser prep reporter, joining us here on the Wrap Game. We will wrap up the second hour of today's Fired Up Friday edition right here after this break on 103.7 The Game.
According to a strange doctor, out of 14,605 possible outcomes for this next segment of Rap Game, only one...
We're in the endgame now.
...doesn't result in half of the universe being snapped out of existence. Let's get back to Ray, because I don't feel so good.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. The Rajon Cajones, they're going to try to have a better start to their weekend road series for the baseball, better than what LSU started off with yesterday. The Raging Cajuns are headed to Alabama to take on Troy for a three-game set. The Cajuns are 2-1 in the Sun Belt on the road so far this season after taking the opening series at Little Rock. So after they had that thrilling come-from-behind walk-off win against the Angry Green Waves, they're going to try to carry that into this three-game series. First game is tonight at 6. First game is, 6 o'clock tonight, 3 p.m. Saturday, and then 1 p.m. on Sunday. Now, the Cajuns need to get something going. We talked about this earlier in the week about, yes, it's great to have that midweek win, but they need to build some momentum off of that because the Cajuns are 12-14 overall and just 3-3 in conference play. So, I'd expect a big game this weekend from Hayden Cantrell, the former Terlings Catholic star. He has that 14-game hitting streak. Sunbelt Player of the Week. Todd Lott is hitting over 500. He has 22 hits and just 72 at-bats. And then Brennan Breaux, a former SDM Cougar star who started off his college career at LSU. He's second on the team. He's really had a breakout year as well. Jacob Schultz will make his second consecutive start tonight. He's gone a team-high 36.2 innings. His ERA is well below 2. And then Austin Perrin will get the start on Saturday. It's the third straight Saturday start for Austin. He's been fairly good, 2-2 overall on the season. His ERA is a little north of 4, though, so you'd like that a little bit lower. And Sunday starter Tony Robichaud has yet to decide who's going to be taking the bump for them in the rubber match on Sunday. Troy is not a good team. They're 11-13 overall. They're a 1-5 in conference play.
Yeah.
We've had this conversation before. The previous week, when App State came into the Teague and said, we're taking 2 or 3, and we're one of the worst teams in the Sun Belt. If the Cajuns want to turn things around and get this going, they have the talent. They have to be more consistent across the board in every game. They can't go on the road and lose to a bad ball club. No. Troy is a bad ball club. They're one of the worst in the Sun Belt.
As I scroll through the season for the Cajuns, I mean, it is a roller coaster if I've ever seen. I mean, 2 losses, a win, and then you've got a five losses in a row, 5 wins in a row. Then you've got 3 losses, then a win, then a loss, then 3 wins, then 2 losses, then a win, then a loss, then a win. I mean, find some consistent. Get on a run here. Win some games in a row.
They have the talent. They have guys like Brennan Breaux.
They always have the talent.
They have Hayden Cantrell. The pitching has not been great, I think, you know, and the Gunnar Leger situation of him now possibly coming out of the bullpen, you know, that's going to be a big question mark. That actually hurts them because I don't know if they have the arms to make up not having Gunnar as part of the rotation. But Tony Robichaud knows how to work his magic better than most. But this is a perfect opportunity for the Cajuns coming off the walk-off win versus Tulane to get things going. If they take this weekend series, they'll have a winning record in Sun Belt play. If they sweep Troy, which they should because Troy's a bad ball club, they could be not only above 500 in Sun Belt play, but above 500 overall and kind of carry that momentum into next week. And try to get something going here, trying to get the season on track. April is going to start on Monday. No time is better than right now for the Raging Cajuns baseball team. Let's see if the Cajuns can take care of business on the road against Troy this weekend. That's going to do it for the second hour in the books. Third hour is going to be Fast and Furious. Barry Herstis up first. Our boy Barry from the Saints News Network is going to join us right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't
stepped on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome to the third and final hour of this fired up Friday edition of the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parks III, right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Got a jam-packed final hour for you. Tyler Nunez, Tiger Rag, he's going to join us at 8:32, going to give us a live report there from the nation's capital. LSU takes on Michigan State in the Sweet 16 tonight. That game you can listen to live, by the way, right here on 103.7 The Game. 5:30 pregame show, 6 o'clock tip. Tyler's going to give us a preview of that. But then, before we get to that, we're also going to dissect the New Orleans Pelicans. That's right, some Pels talk. They got themselves a win last night. We'll dive into that as well here in this final hour, but we're going to start off the last hour of the show the right way, the only way we know how, as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our good friend. He is a contributor, writer, extraordinaire for Big Easy Magazine. It's the one and only Barry Herstis, our boy Barry. Barry, how are you this morning, brother?
How are you? That was a great introduction, my friend. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. let's start off with, did you go ahead and just take a big sigh of relief once the Jared Cook deal got done this week, Barry?
Oh, absolutely. Look, that was a big concern because, you know, if you don't sign him, then you're at the mercy of the NFL draft, which, even though it's a deep class this year at tight end, there's no guarantees, as you well know. So to get a guy like Cook, and look, again, as we discussed last week, I get it that he's about to turn 32 years old here, I think, in the next 2 weeks. But he's never had any significant injuries in his career. He's still in relatively good shape for his age. And now teams will not be able to double-team Michael Thomas. They won't be able to double-team Alvin Kamara because if you do, Drew Brees is going to burn you now because he's got a quality, high-quality tight end to throw the football to. And no knock against Ben Watson, but let's face it, Ben was getting up there, and he wasn't the same player he was 10 years ago. So it's a huge upgrade. To me, it's probably one of the more better signings overall in all of free agency, just because of how I think, or, you know, a lot of people, it's not me, but how a lot of people think that Jared Cook is going to fit within that offense. To me, it's fantastic. Let's not punch the ticket to the Super Bowl 54 yet. Okay. Let's slow our roll and not get too carried away. But undoubtedly, that was a huge missing piece, I think, for their offense. And, of course, we'll see if they try to add maybe another slot receiver or maybe another outside guy in the wide receiver core just to enhance that offensive attack even further. But, man, again, just a fantastic signing. And, look, kudos to Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton, that whole Saints front office. They have been aggressive. They have not, stand pat, per se. They're going all in. They're pushing all the chips into the middle of the table. And, hey, man, given how the last 2 years have played out, it's exactly how they should play this.
Barry, you know, Ben Watson had his best year as a pro back in, 2015.
Yeah,
he had
2015,
a career season for receptions with 74, yardage 825, and six receiving touchdowns. The Saints don't need Jarrett Cook to be Jimmy Graham. They don't need him to put up Jimmy Graham numbers. But if he can do anything remotely to what Ben Watson did in that 2015 season, that's what they're looking for, right?
Absolutely. You nailed it. I mean, you nailed it. That's exactly – you don't need a tight end to get you 1,000 yards. If you do, you're in trouble. I want to emphasize, I see so many Saints fans saying, oh, this guy is washed up. No, he's not. He's not. He's bounced around. He's been he's played for several teams, mainly just because he's been trying to chase a championship ring, and he's come up short. Well, you wasn't going to get it in Oakland, but you sure got a shot at it in New Orleans. And, with Saints taking the approach to this upcoming season in the manner that they have, there's no question about it. Jared Cook, I mean, other than going to the Patriots, which wouldn't have been necessarily a bad decision on his part, that this was a no-brainer for Cook. So, again, it's beneficial to both sides, and certainly it's going to be beneficial to the chances of success for the Saints going forward.
We're talking to Barry Hursis of Big Easy Magazine. But Barry and the Saints News Network, Barry, I know there's been a lot of talk. You said that they're putting all their chips to the center of the table, so to speak. That being said, I still hear reports that they may make a move when it comes to a wide receiver, either with a mid-level free agent or with the draft. And my question to you is this. Now that you have Michael Thomas, you have Alvin Kamara, and you have Jared Cook, those are going to be your top three options in the receiving game. I know Ted Ginn is older, but you still have him in the mix, and you had great production – unexpected great production from the likes of Kirkwood. And Tre'Quan Smith is coming off a rookie season. And then you got Cam Meredith, who you still have
the
high hopes
card.
For. Right, the wild card.
Yeah.
Do the Saints really need to draft another wide receiver or sign another guy in free agency when you have those many guys on the roster?
Yeah, I would say no. Because based on what you just said, you would think, well, they've got enough. There's enough talent there to work with. If you could even lump, of course, looks like Dez Bryant won't be back based on what Sean Payton said the other day. But I mean, you could even lump Dez Bryant into that mix too. So I mean, there's all these guys on the roster, and you're likely only going to keep five or six. So a guy like Kirkwood and Trey. Look, Tre'Quan Tre'Quan Smith has a lot of potential. I just think he hit that wall. As you well know, a lot of rookie players, they hit that wall after a certain point in their rookie seasons. And I think that's what happened with Tre'Quan. I just think he had that great game against the Redskins. And then he had that other game, I believe it's the Eagles, where he had the touchdown catch at the goal line, was really coming on strong. And then it seemed like right after that is when he experienced that huge drop-off. But I think to write off Tre'Quan and say, well, he's a bust, that's ridiculous. He was a rookie. Give the kid a chance. Same with Kirkwood. I mean, he was undrafted, out of Temple, and he looked great. So, I agree with you. In principle, they really don't need one. But I think because of how things have played out the last 2 years, I just feel like Sean Payton, if you look at everything they've done so far, it's almost like he's gone back and they're identifying, okay, what's our weaknesses? What things are we still not good at? What things do we need that we're still lacking in to put this team over the top? And I think getting another complementary weapons for the offense is clearly going to be one of their goals. So, yeah, Cook helps in that regard, certainly. But, you know, don't be – all I'm saying is I'm not advocating or going against them drafting a receiver. All I'm saying is don't be shocked if there's no trades, if there's, you know, and they stand pat and keep the pick at number 62 overall. Don't be surprised at all if a kid like Deebo Samuel of South Carolina, or I don't know if he'll last till 62, but the Hakeem Butler kid from Iowa State that a lot of Saints fans are drooling over right now, that the idea of putting Michael Thomas and a guy like him in the offense together. Hey, we're talking about Sean Payton, so I would never say never, but I agree with you. It might not be as big of a priority to them as it seems to us. So that's something we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Here's another question there for you, Barry, regarding that. You know, the narrative for a long time has been that, for whatever reason, Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton aren't big fans of drafting LSU guys. And there's two guys that could be had there in the second round, or, you know, there if they decide to trade back to get more picks or something in the third round. Tight end Foster Moreau, who could give them depth, and he's impressing scouts left and right. Here's another guy that had a terrific pro day that didn't go to the combine but had a terrific pro day. Ed Alexander, defensive lineman, that could give them great value in depth. What are your thoughts? Do you think this could be a year with the draft picks that they have that they could possibly get one of those LSU guys to help provide depth?
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, Morrow would be that guy, because regardless of the Cook signing, you still need to develop a young tight end. I always get flack from some fans for my views of Josh Hill. Look, I love Josh Hill. Don't get me wrong. Fantastic player. But, you know, as far as your prototypical tight end in today's NFL, Josh ain't the guy. He just ain't. A sound, solid player, you know, gives 110%, fantastic blocker. There's a reason why Josh Hill is still around, okay? But let's not confuse him with Zach Ertz or Travis Kelce. So you need to develop a young tight end. So I think Foster Moreau would be perfect for that. You got a guy like Cook to tutor him and you know, show him the ins and outs, how to run routes, how to do it. I mean, what better mentor could he get? You know, so this was a scenario I had envisioned playing out last year for the Saints with the undrafted kid that they got from, I think it was Western Kentucky. I can't remember his name now. But I thought they would let Ben Watson end up mentoring him. He got cut at the end of preseason, so it never worked out. So I still can see the Saints going with that same scenario, but this time a kid like Foster Moreau, hey, man, he might be sitting there. Well, he definitely would be sitting there at 62, but wouldn't shock me if he's still sitting there in the fifth round. He may not, but look, if he's still sitting there, and again, don't be surprised if the Saints do a little wheeling and dealing. They're not done. Believe me, I can see them maybe signing another free agent, maybe Ezekiel Ansah still out there. So maybe, you know, once he gets the medical clearance or whatever they're still waiting on, maybe he would be a guy they'll look at bringing in. But otherwise, I think any remaining holes, so to speak, they're going to address it through the draft. You know, obviously, if put a lot of emphasis on the defensive line, basically because they have no choice but to do so. I saw, if you saw, they're bringing in Ed Oliver for a visit, the defensive tackle for University of Houston. Of course, there's no way he'll be there at 62, so they'd obviously have to do some trading up to get him. But point being that this team is not done making moves. The aggression that they have displayed all offseason is far from over, and don't be surprised. Just don't be shocked is all I'm telling you. If you see Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis doing a little wheeling and dealing behind the scenes, and the next thing you know, bam, New Orleans is on the clock in the first round. I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying don't be surprised when it happens.
And with a team that's going to put all their chips into the center of the table, Barry, right? Why not? I mean, if they think this year is their year, and that this is the last year they're going to have of top-notch Drew Brees, why not go ahead and trade that 2020 pick to get back into the first round here and make a move and get maybe that last key piece? Barry, real quick before I let you go, your thoughts about what the NFL owners were able to decide about essentially what we were calling the NOLA no call now, the challenge that they have. Are you surprised that that occurred as quickly as it did?
Yes, I am. Just because the league is so image conscious, they're more worried about, what they should be worried about is the integrity of the game. And if you go look at my article that's up at Saints News Network right now, I just covered it, where I basically say the Saints are now essentially the heels or the bad guys, so to speak, like a pro wrestling analogy. They're the bad guys of the NFL now because of all this. And as I tell you this morning, embrace it. Don't. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. The Saints were robbed of an opportunity to win a world championship. This ain't like, okay, well, it's a regular season game and it's one loss out of 16 games. No, this is a chance to win the world championship. It's an entirely different scenario or situation. Look, Saints fans are never going to get any satisfaction out of this. Make no mistake about it. But the ways to finally get payback or satisfaction or whatever analogy you want to use is to go out in the upcoming season and just lay it all on the line, and then whatever happens, happens. But you can't shrink back. You can't pull back and be afraid. Look, it's all or nothing. I mean, Drew Brees has got maybe this season, maybe next season, and we don't know it beyond that. So why not? Why not just go for it? And you got a good young roster of talent that chances are pretty good. Even when Brees is gone, you're still going to have a good foundation, a solid core to maintain that success after he's gone. So look, why not try to go all in and win the title before the man's out of the sport? Makes sense to me. So we'll see how it goes.
Barry, makes sense to me too, brother. I appreciate you taking the time out. As always, my friend, enjoy your weekend, and we'll holler at you next Friday.
Yes, sir, and go Tigers.
That's our boy, Barry Hurstis, delivering the goods, as always, for us here on the Rap Game with RP3. When we come back after this quick break, New Orleans Pelicans talk. That's right, the Pels got themselves a W last night. We'll talk more about that right here on 103.7 The Game.
Game on.
The commercials are a wrap. And that means Rap Game is back. Right now on 103.7 The Game.
Mr. Doubleina, Mr. Bob Doubleina. Mr. Doubleina, Mr. Bob Doubleina.
Friends, in Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor you hire is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
Julius against Buddy Hield, going to his strong side, and he got banged, made no difference. Three-point game with contact. What a night for Julius Randle.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsons III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. The Pels last night were able to pull out a victory over the Sacramento Kings. The Kings did appear to be a playoff team at one portion of the season, or for a significant portion of this season, but they're now faded, and it appears they're going to be on the outside looking in when it comes to the Western Conference playoff picture. And the Pels were able to get a 121-118 victory last night. And they did so with guys that you don't even know. I mean, let's be real. Anthony Davis was held out again because of back spasms. So he was held out of the game completely. They were also without guard Frank Jackson. Drew Holiday has been shut down. He had surgery. He's not playing this year, the rest of the year. And Etuan Moore. They were depleted. And yet, on Thursday, the Pels still found a way to win. Julius Randle stepped up, had himself a huge game. Christian Wood also had a great game. And Jahlil Okafor showed off his versatility as well as they got the big victory. As he's had in eight of the Pelicans' past 11 games, Julius Randle led the squad in scoring. He had 34 points. He went 3 of 5 from three-point range and finished 7 of 7 at the free throw line to go along with 11 rebounds. We talked about this earlier the week with Les East. What's going on with Julius Randle not being able to rebound the ball? Is there an injury? It doesn't appear to be an injury. It doesn't appear like there's effort going on with the rebounding. I don't know if Julius is a fan of the Rap Game with RP3. I'll take credit for that. But apparently he did, because he had himself a monster game on the boards. He gave the Pels energy like he always does. And he stepped up big. It also, though, Christian Wood had a big game. He's the newest team member. He was just signed like a week ago. He finished the first half with 13 points. And that's coming off the breakout performance he had on Tuesday night, remember, where he set career highs in points, rebounds, blocks, and minutes played. Undrafted talent. Look, once again, no one's going to mistake those guys as perennial all-stars, as considered guys that are going to be in the MVP race. But if you're the Pels, you love the effort that this team is providing on a night-in, night-in basis. They're still grinding. They're still out there scrapping and fighting and trying to win ball games. And they're still bad enough that they're still going to be in the draft lottery. So you love to see in the heart and the grit that they're showing. And, you know, they're not winning enough games to jeopardize your chances in the NBA lottery. So congrats to the young fellas there for the Pels for pulling out the win. When we come back here after this quick break, Tyler Nunes, Tiger Rag live from the nation's capital, helping us preview LSU versus Michigan State, Sweet 16, right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
To Rap Game, the show that's got,
you know, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have you,
and a host that desperately wants to be called
El Deuterino if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
We please ask that you don't call Ray that or any of the following.
The dude, his dudeness,
or
duder.
Thank you. Now back to RP3.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Hey guys, LSU fans, just a reminder, head out to Twin Peaks on Johnston this afternoon. The good brother, Ben Love, he's going to be hosting Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Twin Peaks on Johnston. He's going to lead you right into pregame at 5:30. He's going to be out there from 4 to 5:30, broadcasting live. He's going to lead you into LSU pregame at 5:30, tip at 6 o'clock for the Sweet 16 matchup. You can hang out with Ben. You can get some great deals out there on the wings. They also are going to have a Friday special today on their boiled crawfish. So go out there, check out. Ben Love will be broadcasting live from Bumper to Bumper Sports there at Twin Peaks on Johnston, and they'll be sticking around for a little bit of a watch party afterwards. We're going to talk more about this LSU versus Michigan State matchup in the Sweet 16 with our good friend Tyler Nunes from Tiger Rag as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. And welcome on Tyler, who is calling us directly from the nation's capital. Tyler, how are you this morning, brother?
Dude, I'm great. I'm in the museum right now. I've been wanting to come here like my entire life. And so I'm living it up right now.
I love it, man. I love it. Let's start off with this getting here, everything that they had to overcome. You know, they had the lull against Yale in the opener. We talked about that last week. And then they had a little bit of a second half lull again against Maryland. But they were able to overcome those, and they were able to fight those off and get the win. Just, Tyler, we've talked about this a lot this season. This team doesn't seem to kind of wince at all. They seem to thrive in pressure situations. Even if they have a lead and they let it get away from them, they don't get rattled. How much of an asset is that going to be tonight against Michigan State?
I mean, it's going to be huge. They're going up against a blue blood in Michigan State, a team that is seemingly in this situation year after year. They're in their first Sweet 16 in about 4 years now, but this is a team that as they won a national championship in 2000 with Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo has been their coach for more than 20 years now. He's a bona fide Hall of Famer. And they're not getting rattled is kind of the name of the game. On top of that, they're going up against Cassius Winston, one of the best players in the country. He's a point guard that'll go one-on-one with Tremont Waters. I think that's going to be a really interesting matchup. But like you said, not getting rattled is going to be the key here, especially for a young team like LSU going up against a bunch of juniors and seniors in Michigan State. If they can keep composed in that situation, then they should be good on at least on that end moving forward.
Tyler, Michigan State does not play a zone. Maryland switched to the zone in the second round matchup and proved to be very effective against LSU. Tom Izzo is one of the greatest coaches of all time. Do you expect him to try to play some little zone and practice that this week, or do you think they're just going to play man like they always do?
I think they're just going to play man. Unless they get into some severe trouble, I think that man is going to be what he does. He doesn't really like the zone. He seems to be very anti-zone, in fact. We talked to a reporter earlier this week on our radio show, and he said in the 25 years he's covered Tom Izzo, he's only seen him go to the zone like 10 times. So I'd be very surprised if he pulls it out against LSU unless they get into some very severe trouble. But expect a man. That doesn't mean that LSU is going to have an advantage, though. Michigan State has one of the most efficient defenses in the country. Tom Izzo coaches them up very well, and it's going to be tough for LSU to get to the basket.
We're talking to Tyler Nunes of Tiger Rag. Tyler, how key is going to, in tonight's game, Cavale Bigby-Williams and Naz Reid?
Oh, absolutely huge. That's where they have the biggest advantage, at least on paper. They've got a big size advantage in Naz Reid and Cavale Bigby-Williams. The biggest guy Michigan State plays is 6'9", and most of their postmen are 6'8". If LSU can hustle out there and get the ball, I think playing through Naz Reid is really going to be the key here. His size, the fact that Michigan State's going to play one-on-one and Naz's passing ability, I think really the key to this game is going to be played through Naz Reid. So definitely look for that to happen. And Cavale Bigby-Williams is going to be big on defense, as he always is. He's going to need to play a big role on that side of the ball.
Tyler, how's the matchup with Tremont Waters? Who's he going to be going up against? And, you know, who's going to be the primary defender on him? What kind of matchup is that?
He's going up against Cassius Winston, who's one of the best point guards in the country. He averages nearly 18 points a game and 7 rebounds. He and Tremont Waters are both Bob Cousy Award finalists for best point guard in the country. It's going to be a battle. I think Tremont Waters has the edge defensively, but Cassius Winston is a very dynamic scorer. He shoots better than 40% from the three-point line. He can score from every level of the defense. It's going to be a challenge for him, but it's going to be fun to watch. I think that's where everyone's looking, right? I think even Tom Izzo said they've got both of these teams have two great quarterbacks, and I think that's a really good way to put it. This game is going to be won and lost, not necessarily won and lost by the point guard play, but that's definitely the matchup you want to watch.
Have you been surprised at all, Tyler, by the fact that Skylar Mays has led this team in scoring in the first two games of this tournament?
No, not at all. I love Skylar Mays. Skylar Mays is a fantastic basketball player. He's a very intelligent basketball player. He knows when to take his shot. He knows when to take those risks. That three-pointer he hit with in the final minute of the game against Maryland to put him up by three, that was not a shot he would normally take, but he knew he needed to take it, and it went in. So Skylar Mays leading the team in scoring through the first two games of this tournament, not really surprising to me at the least. He's one of the most mature, one of the smartest basketball players on this team.
What kind of role do you expect to see from Javonte Smart, Tyler? Because, you know, he came off the bench and he's played well. He hasn't been sensational by any stretch of the imagination, but he's played well so far in the NCAA tournament. What kind of role do you see for him in this matchup against Michigan State?
He should thrive in a one-on-one environment. He's very good at getting to the basket and finishing around there. So I think when he gets the ball, he needs to know when to take his shot. And when he does, he needs to go to the basket with reckless abandon. Obviously, you don't want to pick up a foul, but if there's any team that is less deep than LSU in this tournament, it's Michigan State with all their injuries and suspensions they have. So I think that they want to get Michigan State in foul trouble. I think Javonte Smart is good at drawing fouls but with the way that he drives to the basket, and I think that's something he's going to need to take advantage of in this game.
What's kind of a under-the-radar storyline heading to this game for you, Tyler?
Underrated. Well, Darius Days, apparently his dream school was Michigan State. So him going up against Tom Izzo and Michigan State, the team that his idol Draymond Green played for, is really interesting to me. And I think that he's going to play a vital role in this game coming off the bench. I know a lot of people don't think about Darius Days, but he's really good at stretching out defenses with his ability to shoot, his size, and his athleticism. And I think that he's going to play a really vital role in this game, much like he did against Maryland. He came in, scored 10 points in 15 minutes, and they got five rebounds, and that's exactly what they need him to do against a team like Maryland and against a team like Michigan State. So he can come in and have a game against a team that he once referred to as a dream school and help LSU get to the Elite Eight. I think that's going to be a fun little story.
We're on with Tyler Nunes of Tiger Rag. Tyler, a theme that has developed throughout this year is the Tigers are better when they're the underdog. We saw that in the win at Kentucky. We saw that when against Tennessee in the overtime win inside the PMAC, or even on the road at Ole Miss when they were the underdog there earlier in the season. And they just seem to thrive on that. Why? What is it about this team that they actually play better when they're the underdog rather than when they are the favorite?
I just think they have a chip on their shoulder. This is a team that they felt like they're the underdog from the start of the season. They were picked to finish sixth in the SEC by preseason media and coaches. I think they took offense to that, and they went out and won the SEC tournament. I think they enjoy proving people wrong. They've got an entire nation of people who think that they're the bad guys, and they don't really think about that. They want to go out there and prove everyone wrong. They want to prove, like, as far as they're concerned, they're not involved in any of this controversy. They're just out there to play basketball, and that's what they've been doing. I think they've done a really good job of that, and I think that they really thrive on kind of being the heel in this tournament, just wanting to prove to everyone that they're not the team that everyone thinks they are.
And to kind of further that point, you're right, because who was the biggest trendy pick to lose in the first round? It was LSU, right? That was the trendy pick. Everyone was picking Yale to upset LSU, and yet you're right, they have this chip on their shoulder. How would you grade the job that interim coach Tony Benford has done since he took over prior to the Vanderbilt game?
I think it's a group effort. I hate to put it on one guy. Tony Benford is the interim head coach, but Greg Heyer's done a really good job stepping up. Billy Armstrong's done a good job stepping up. I even think Greg Golden there, the strength and conditioning guy, has done a lot to kind of get these guys focused. And I think the group of these assistant coaches have really done a good job of unifying this team under one common goal and keeping them focused on with the prizes. They're without their head coach right now, but that doesn't mean that they can just give up. They're trying to win a national championship. I think that's what a lot of people are forgetting. Yes, the tournament. They're just trying to win the game ahead of them, but the end goal of this is a national championship. And the only way you can do that is if you focus on the game ahead of you and you don't worry about all the outside noise that's coming around you. And I think the entire group of assistant coaches has done a really good job of keeping these players focused on that.
If they do get past Michigan State, a lot of folks have said this, Tyler, that LSU actually matches up better with Duke. that they have a favorable matchup because of Naz Reid and Big B Williams. I don't know if I buy that. For you, as someone who's covered this team day in and day out, do you buy that, that if they do get past Michigan State, that it's a favorable matchup against Duke?
I don't know if I'd call it a favorable matchup, but, I mean, it's not going to be a blowout. They haven't been blown out by anybody but Oklahoma State this season, and I think that was a bit of an anomaly. So I have a hard time saying that they have a favorable matchup against Duke. I don't think anyone has a favorable matchup against Duke. When you've got guys like R.J. Barrett, Cam Reddish, and, of course, Zion Williamson, I don't know how you guard all three of those guys effectively, no matter who you have. Now, the thing is, LSU is one of the most athletic teams in the country. I think Duke is probably one of the only teams that has a more athletic group of guys, but I think that LSU should be able to hang with those guys as long as they stay out of foul trouble, and I think it should be a really interesting matchup at the very least.
We're on with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Aggie. He joins us every Friday here on the Rap Game with RP3. Tyler, I want to switch off from basketball, and I know you're not there back in Baton Rouge covering spring football, but how promising is it that Christian Fulton was out there taking part in drills when we thought early on that the star cornerback would not even take part in any spring drills whatsoever?
I think it's very promising. I think he's one of the most talented defensive backs they have on the team. I think he showed that last season, and I think that the combination of him and Derek Stingley Jr. is going to be quite the handful for most offenses to kind of deal with. So the fact that he's out there already is a very good sign. I think I wish him luck. I hope he's out and healthy much sooner than we expected, and I'm glad to see that he's getting some playing time in spring.
And before we let you go, brother, what are some of the things? I know you've been so focused on basketball, but you're also connected to the football team. What's a storyline that's kind of popped up to you so far here in the first few weeks of spring ball for the LSU football team?
The impact that Joe Brady has had on this offense is something that a lot of people have been talking about. And I think a lot of people were wondering how big of a role he'd play, but apparently he's played a very large role in the passing in the offense and the way that they're going to run the offense this season. Expect to see a lot more run-pass option. Expect to see some more tight end play, supposedly. I don't know if I buy that yet. I've been told that for like 5 years in a row that they're going to get the tight ends more involved. But that's what we're being told right now. But expect the offense to look a little bit different. They went and got this guy for Joe Burrow. They got this guy so that they can build an offense around him. And it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like come next season.
Tyler, I know you're busy, brother, but I appreciate you making some time for us. Enjoy tonight's game. Enjoy being at the museum. And have yourself a safe and fun time, brother, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ray.
It's Tyler Nunez giving us a live report from the nation's capital. He was actually inside the museum making time for us. He's taking a tour. He's
like, which museum? He's in D.C.
The Newseum. That's the museum for journalism.
The Newseum. I didn't hear you. The Newseum. Is that really what it's called, or did you call it that?
No, it's really, that's what it's called.
That's so great. So, who named that?
It was not me. I did not have a role in that decision making. When we come back here, we will wrap up this fired up edition of the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game.
His favorite breakfast food is crepes.
Oh, I love the crepes he's at.
I wish I could crawl into one of those right now.
He does karate in his garage.
You want to go do karate in the garage?
Yup.
And he's always got Little River Band on deck.
LRB.
I've always got Little River Band loaded up here. I got six discs in here.
Here's RP3.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsh III. I want to take a moment here, thank all of our guests that came on today. Eric Narcisse from the Daily Advertiser. He's going to be a regular guest for us every Friday morning. So looking forward to having him on, breaking down high school here in Acadiana for us. Also, our regular guest, as always, our boy Barry Hurstis from the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. He joined us, and also Tyler Nunez live from Washington, D.C. Look, just a reminder, guys, head out to Twin Peaks today on Johnston. Trust me, you're going to enjoy yourself. Not only do they always have the great deals on the wings, and they got the teeth-shattering beer on tap, and the scenic views, as we know. But the good brother, Ben Love, is going to be out there today. He's going to be broadcasting live starting at 4 o'clock. He's going to lead you in to the NCAA tournament game between LSU and Michigan State, tip at 6 o'clock. They also are having a deal out there on crawfish tonight. So go hang out with Ben, check out the show, and then hang around and watch the LSU game right there on Twin Peaks on Johnston. Also, if you haven't already done so, you still got time to go to the 103.7 The Game webpage and sign up for the Masters Tournament Challenge. Look, it's real simple, guys. The only thing you have to do, you just go to our webpage, you click on the link, you sign up, and you just pick one golfer. That's all you got to do. You don't even have to know about golf. Just go on there. You say, hey, that name seems interesting. I have no idea who that is. Or, hey, my first husband was named that. I'm not picking that guy, but I'll pick the guy who has my second husband's name. That's fine. Whatever your theory is, just go on there, sign up, pick the golfer that you think is going to win the 2019 Masters. If that winning golfer is selected by more than one entry, we will put all correct entries in a raffle and select a winner. The prize, a $100 gift card from our friends at golfballs.com. So, look, it's an easy $100, easy gift card. Go check it out right now. If you need a link, we've also tweeted it out as well, and you can check it out through our Facebook page. It's been a tremendous week. We started off the show, though, today with a revelation, ladies and gentlemen. For the first time in this collaboration between myself and Cody Schutz here on the Rap Game with RP3, I got to see the darker side, the hatred, the darkness inside of Cody Schutz as we talked LSU baseball.
Good, let the evil flow through you.
How are you doing now, Cody? Have you calmed down?
I'm in a much better mood because you brought up Borat during the break. So now me and Jace are in here laughing at Borat jokes. So I'm in a much better mood.
You're not.
Bravo. Bravo.
You should have saw that coming, brother.
Bravo. I set that up for you. Oh, hey, make sure to tune in Monday.
What are you doing this weekend? I know on Fridays you like to break down your weekends. What you got planned?
Well, it's been a crazy week. Lots of work, not a lot of sleep.
Yeah, true.
But that said, I think the wife had already texted me in the second hour of the show, and she was like, "We're having crawfish tonight.
Party, dude! I'll be at the Parch household tonight. Thanks for the invite.
There it goes. So the wife wants crawfish, so we're gonna get our boiled crawfish on tonight.
Oh, nice.
So we'll have a nice little family night.
Do me a favor.
Yes.
I've seen this all. It seems to be the craze, at least on mine and my wife's Facebook feed. This seems to be the craze for crawfish season. Go buy a pineapple and put the whole pineapple in there. I've seen it all over Facebook. I've never done
fruit?
It. I've never done it.
Fruit?
But that is what I've seen multiple people, and they rave about it. Put a pineapple
in your boiled
crawfish.
This reminds me
crawfish.
About the world's largest gumbo that took
place at
the
eyeball. Oh, yeah. We did do that.
This is
different, though, because you can very easily avoid the pineapple, as where in the gumbo it was all cooked, you know.
Yeah, but what if there's holes in the pineapple, and then you got the pineapple juices, and I don't want pineapple.
I'm just saying that's what I've seen on Facebook. It's not my bag, baby.
Pineapple? Fruit in my crawfish?
Yeah, you know what else is good, though? And maybe for your daughter, she might really like this. You do the corn, right, and all that, obviously.
Oh, yeah, we do the corn and the potatoes, yes.
I've done this a handful of times. I don't do it every time, and I don't know why. But if you have young children, it works really well. Take a can of corn, not cream corn, obviously, just regular corn.
Ugh.
And take the label off of it. Take the paper label off of it. And stab it with a knife a few times. The can itself. Get like 4 or 5 holes in it.
Okay, so like
dump
so,
all
so.
The juice in it and then throw that in the boil. And for your daughter, she doesn't have to sit with the corn on the cob and mess with it. She can have, you can open up the can after it cools and she can have crawfish boiled can. You see what I'm saying?
Oh,
not on the cob.
That.
See what
nice.
I'm saying? It tastes the same.
She is a big fan of the corn on the cob. We went to a crawfish bowl last week and they just put the potatoes and the corn in an ice chest, you know, in there. And she would eat like 3/4 of the corn on the cob, and then she'd be like, Daddy, you have to finish this. And I said, okay, sweetheart. And then 20 seconds later, she's like, I need another corn on the cob. And I was like, you didn't finish the one that you already had.
Just give her a bowl of corn.
Just give her a bowl of corn. Y'all have a terrific weekend. Be safe out there. Go enjoy yourself. Good luck to the Cajuns. Good luck to the Tigers. We'll talk to y'all on Monday. Wrap game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game.